Last week, there was an article that was published by Fox News entitled, "What Are Angel Numbers and Why Do People Keep Seeing Them?" And I hadn't heard much on angel numbers, but apparently angel numbers is a certain sequence of numbers that people look for in their daily lives. It might be the way the clock reads, certain number sequence. Might be you come upon somebody and they're on their license plate, you see a certain sequence of numbers, and apparently these certain sequences of numbers mean certain things, and some believe that it is an angel trying to communicate to you through these number sequences. And so you're receiving a message from an angel. Of course, it's superstitions and a very lack of understanding of angels. Now, many do believe in angels and an angelic realm, but their understanding of angels is quite surface in understanding and inaccurate. Of course, the study of angels, there's a certain depth of angels, a certain depth of understanding with the angelic realm and Satan that is very important to us as Christians. And there's a lot on the topic in the Bible. But, you know, many do believe in angels. About 77% of Christians do believe that angels are real and the guardian angels are real. It's just what they do with that belief. Really, it's not based upon the Bible. They may have many figurines of angels, might worship them in a certain way, or have a whole, you know, some collect these angel figurines at home, maybe put an angel, what they believe an angel looks like, on the top of a Christmas tree. Some believe that angels are there to help them find love. You hear about the angel Cupid. It might help them find love. And so there's really this kind of surface idea of angels, and numeric signs from angels also fits in that category. But again, when you look into the Bible on the topic of angels, there is a depth that you and I have that is a wonderful blessing to have, the understanding of the angelic realm. And in fact, it's part of our fundamental beliefs. Fundamental belief number two is on the angelic realm and Satan. And this is what I would like to speak on today. Now, you might think, why is the angelic realm and Satan part of our fundamental beliefs? Why is this important to us as Christians? You know, the definition of a fundamental, or of fundamental, something that is fundamental, is forming a necessary base or a core of central importance. Why is this one of our 20 fundamental beliefs? Why is this of the utmost importance? It is very important. And part of the reason why it is important in understanding the angelic realm is because that is really the core understanding of where the spiritual battle starts with us. If we don't understand who the enemy is, who the adversary is, where some of those tactics and where the wiles of the devil really started from, and the history of the angelic realm and the details of that, we will be lacking. We won't recognize or understand really who we are fighting, what we are fighting, the attitudes that we're fighting, and where those attitudes come from. Satan is trying to sway God's people. There are the wiles of the devil, the trickery of the devil. There are the tactics of the devil. And he wants God's people to tap out. As was brought up in the sermonette, commitment. Commitment is something that Satan attacks all the time. He wants one to be discouraged, to give up, to quit on marriages, to quit on God, to sow doubt in one's mind. Now, these are part of the tactics that Satan uses because he wants them to give up. Now, if we don't recognize where these attacks are coming from, what the tactics are, what the wiles of the devil are, we're going to be lacking. So again, there is a depth of understanding that God has granted us, and it is a wonderful understanding to realize what has taken place before us in the history of the angelic realm, because it can greatly help us in the future. Now, here's a brief synopsis of this fundamental belief, and it's found on our website. It is fundamental belief number 2, the angelic realm and Satan. And it says, angelic realm, the angelic realm consisting of various types of spirit beings was created by God. A former covering cherub, Lucifer, rebelled against God's authority and became Satan the devil. As Lucifer, he influenced 1/3 of the angels to follow him. Those who followed him are now evil spirits known as demons. Satan and the devil is the adversary of both God and mankind. He and his demons influence mankind to reject God and his law. These evil spirits have been allowed temporary dominion over the earth and have deceived the majority of human beings. The angels who remained faithful to God serve as ministering spirits to those responding to God's calling. So this is what I would like to look at today, and in thinking about the subject, and it's a huge topic, but how and at what angle am I going to go about this? Because you think about Satan himself, that could be 2 separate sermons just on, well, many more sermons probably than just 2, just on the topic of Satan the devil. And then you have the angelic realm, which we have all kinds of topics there, the creation of angels, the types of angels, the ranks of angels, how angels are accountable to God, the judgment of angels. And the different topics go on and on. The worship of angels. You know, so it's a huge topic. We won't be able to go into all the different details in this regard on the angelic realm and Satan. But instead, I'd like to take a little different approach, and we'll still cover a lot of the basis. But what I would like to do is parallel and compare and contrast 2 archangels. One being Michael, the archangel, and Lucifer, the archangel that, of course, rebelled and is our adversary, now known as Satan the devil. And by reviewing this topic in this way, really we will get into a lot of the depths of the angelic realm. But I'd like to first start by looking at the 3 archangels that we conclude are archangels, even though they don't maybe specifically say archangel. Michael is really the only one that is referred to as a specific archangel. But let's start with Lucifer. As we, when you piece things together, you can conclude that he was an archangel as well. But Lucifer, as we know, was an incredibly beautiful angel. Lucifer, the Hebrew word is Helil, and it means light bearer or shining one, morning star. There's beauty that was with him. It was incredibly bright, full of beauty. But unfortunately, the beauty led to pride and really a love for self. Lucifer ended up thinking very highly of himself and really had a great love for himself and what he believed he deserved. Now, there's a term in psychology. Of course, there's a lot of symptoms that are always out there, but in psychology, there's different diagnoses that one would make upon these different symptoms. Well, the attitude, the mindset of Satan the devil, basically, so the psychology world, they would, to describe these type of characteristic traits, would be called a narcissist, one who is in love with self. There are 5 main characteristic traits of a narcissist: inflated ego, lack of empathy. And you think about, I'll read these, but you think, who is the originator of these attitudes, of this mindset? We know where it started from. Inflated ego, lack of empathy, need for attention, suppressed insecurities, and few boundaries. Now, if you're like me, when you hear these 3, you think, well, I've been insecure before. Definitely have broke God's law, and that's a boundary. Am I a narcissist? Before we self-diagnose ourselves as narcissists, we must understand, too, again, these are attitudes that he has influenced mankind to be a part of from the beginning, from when he rebelled, and when Adam and Eve was there. From the very beginning, this is what he has tried to push upon mankind in these attitudes. So, yes, we do struggle with ego, having a lack of empathy for one another, need for attention, suppressed insecurities, few boundaries. These are some things that we are having to, at times, repent of so that we can be in line. But this is an attitude and a core that he totally embraced wholeheartedly, and this is his nature. This is what he is like, and he is trying to promote and influence mankind in the same way. Narcissistic behavior has a lifelong, and it's a long pattern of exaggerated feelings of self-importance and an excessive need of admiration. And this is where pride can really do its work. It can really enter in and cause one to be a profane thing. Ezekiel 28 and verse 12. Ezekiel 28 in verse 12, we know the duality here between Lucifer and Satan and the king of Tyre. It says, "You were a seal of perfection, full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. You were in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was your covering, the sardis, topaz, and diamond, beryl, onyx, and jasper, sapphire, turquoise, and emerald with gold. The workmanship of your timbrels and pipes was prepared for you on the day you were created. You were the anointed cherub who covers. I established you. You were on the holy mountain of God. You walked back and forth in the midst of fiery stones. You were perfect in your ways from the day you were created, till iniquity was found in you. By the abundance of your trading," and this could be the trading of words, slander, part of swaying the angels against God, "but the abundance of your trading, you became filled with violence within. You sinned. Therefore I cast you out as profane out of the mountain of God, and I destroyed you, O covering cherub, from the midst of a fiery stones, of the fiery stones." And this is the next verse, verse 17. We see where some of this stemmed from. "Your heart was lifted up because of your beauty. You corrupted your wisdom for the sake of your splendor." He fell in love with self. He was lifted up because of his beauty. That self-love, that love of self. You know, prior to the return of Jesus Christ, before the world self implodes, before the world self destructs, we know that Jesus Christ is going to step in and he's going to save mankind from destroying itself. We'll have the capability of destroying itself, but God will intervene through Jesus Christ, but he will basically save mankind from himself. What will be the attitude prior to the return of Jesus Christ? Times will be stressful, we're told. It will be perilous times. But notice what the very first attribute is in describing these perilous times in the end times. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1. "But know this, that in the last days perilous times will come, for men will be lovers of themselves." They will have great affection for themselves, pride. They will be lovers of themselves. Where did this attitude come from originally? "Lovers of money, boasters, proud," inflated ego, we might say, "blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power, and from such people turn away." So why will there be perilous times? Because the nature of Satan will be in full force. A man will really be taking on the attitude, the mindset of Satan the devil. Lovers of self, lack of empathy, stubbornness, inflated ego, a lack of love for God, no boundaries. Satan's way of life will be promoted in full force. What's ironic is that, you know, if we could think about it like a graph, maybe, you know, you'd see maybe Satan's influence being greater and greater. Well, you see this stressful times, see mankind really taking on the attitudes. So maybe you would see this graph that looks like it's going up. But really what's happening as far as the understanding and belief that there is even an evil being that's influencing, if you had a different graph, you'd probably say it's going down as far as belief that there is a devil or belief that there is an evil being that can influence in that way. So you'd almost have this cross graph where it doesn't make much sense. Really, it should be parallel, the understanding of Satan's, the evilness of Satan and how he is influencing. But yet he's managed to kind of go underground, and many do not even understand or see the effects of Satan. They don't believe that there is a being that's really believable as being Satan. Most Christians do not believe that there is Satan. They believe that he's not a living being, but there is a symbol of evil. He's just this symbol of evil. And we know, you know, how the cartoons portray him, and is this just more so a cartoon, pitchfork, tail, and all that. But somehow, the father of lies, the one who is a murderer from the beginning, has been able to stay relatively in hiding. And isn't that what an evil being does? You know, influence and affect and stay off-grid. This is an evil being, and the world does not recognize, does not see. And so for most, it is out of sight, out of mind. And really, it's not going to affect me. Too strong for that. You know, it's got silliness that I could be influenced. And just because we can't see it doesn't mean that the battle is not real. I think we heard a lot of messages on this subject on faith with the Winter Family Weekend. And if there was one little nugget that seemed to be repeated, it was, you know, just because we can't see it does not mean it's not real. And, you know, it's part of faith. But just because we don't see the angelic realm, and it's for a reason, I don't think we could handle it. If we really understood the battles and the warfare that was taking place, does not mean that it isn't a real battle and a real warfare that we are fighting. Which means if God's people start to drift from God, they could be influenced. And we can never have the lackadaisical approach of, it can't affect me, this could not affect me, I'm too strong for that. That's just silliness. It's almost like saying there is no devil, or, you know, can't affect me. So if we stop praying, if we stop drawing close to God, if we stop studying, if we stop fellowshipping with God's people, if we stop attending services, if we stop fasting occasionally, if we stop meditating on God's word, Satan can influence in a greater capacity, and we must understand that. It is so vitally important that we understand that the due diligences that God has called us to be a part of and to do, to draw close to him, it's vitally important. We must draw close to God. Time is getting shorter, and while Satan still has time to work, he is going to pull out all the stops, if you will. He will try to influence God's people. So it's important to recognize this part of the angelic realm, that there is an evil being, and in some ways, how he strived to influence the holy, righteous angels and was able to pull away a third of them. You know, there you and I are on the radar, so to speak. There are going to be those tactics to discourage, to lose sight. But we must also think about the help that God has provided his people to, lest we get too discouraged or feel overwhelmed, because God has provided us an enormous amount of help to stay committed, to stay focused, to remain faithful to the end, like the holy, righteous angels, the two-thirds of them that remain faithful, twice as many. God has provided help primarily, and number one, through our advocate and high priest, Jesus Christ. He has provided us help through the power of his Spirit, the very mind of Christ in us. You know, the parakletos, the help, the helper, God's Spirit dwelling in us. God provides us help and aid through his angels, through the angelic realm, as they are referred to as ministering spirits. So you'd say servants of God. They're to help, to protect, to guide. We'll say to guide. We don't talk to them. But we don't know some of the things that have been a great help to us behind the scenes. We don't really know all of the details. We do know that they are ministering spirits like servants that help God's people. They're serving God. And there's also the help that God provides through the support and help of the ministry and through the encouragement of the local brethren. So we do have help, and that is wonderful that we should think about that. Let's go ahead and look at the next archangel, Gabriel. He is one of the two archangels that remained faithful to God. Now, the scriptures depict that Gabriel is a type of messenger angel, you know, where there are messages that were given, whether it be to the prophet Daniel. At times it was Gabriel, where it's noted it was Gabriel that was delivering that message to Daniel about certain visions. Gabriel was also the angel there to inform Zacharias of his wife Elizabeth, how she would bear the son named John, who would go before and turn many to God. He also let Zacharias know that he was not going to be able to talk for a duration of time because he did not believe in what the message was that he was giving him. Because he did not believe, he was able to shut his mouth during that time. So he controlled some communication bridges, let's just say. Gabriel's a messenger angel, so he was able to hinder him from giving a message himself. And Gabriel is speculated to be the angel that is in reference in 1 Thessalonians 4 and verse 16. It's speculated by the church because of the different areas where he is a messenger angel. So it does make sense that it could be the voice of the archangel that will announce the return of Jesus Christ, as it describes with the voice of an archangel. And it might be Gabriel. Gabriel was a messenger, and he's a servant of God. He remained faithful. And then we have the archangel Michael. Again, Michael is the only other high-ranking angel mentioned in the Bible, being identified by name five times. What does the archangel Michael mean? Michael is a personal name, and it means who is like God. Who is like God? This is according to the Holman Bible Dictionary. And although the Bible indicates that there are other high-ranking angels, Michael is the only angel specifically called an archangel. And the word archangel comes from the Greek word archangelos, and it means archangel, and it means chief of the angels. Chief of the angels, according to Strong's lexicon. So for the rest of the message, I would like to look at the characteristic traits of Michael the archangel, the chief of the angels. And we'll compare and contrast with the attitude and mindset of Lucifer, who became Satan the devil. First, Michael the archangel was a defender of God's will. Michael the archangel was a defender of God's will. Let's turn to Jude 1 and verse 9. Jude 1 in verse 9 says, "Yet Michael the archangel, in contending with the devil, when he disputed about the body of Moses, dared not bring against him a reviling accusation, but said, 'The Lord rebuke you.'" I won't get into the detail there. We'll get into that a little bit later, but I just want to focus on the fact that, yes, he did contend. He disputed with Satan about the body of Moses, because he knew what God's will was, and he was going to defend God's will. Won't turn here, but in Deuteronomy 34 and verse 6, we're told that God himself buried Moses, and nobody knew where the grave of Moses was located. And so we know what God's will was, and he was going to uphold God's will. He was going to contend. Apparently Satan wanted to know, or he wanted to do something. Maybe he knew, I guess, and he wanted to move he wanted to contend about that, disputed about the body of Moses. Now, why did God not want this to be known? Why did he not want anyone to know where his grave was? Now, in the ancient world, this is one possibility, but in the ancient world, graves of religious leaders, sometimes they would be sites for superstitious behavior, where individuals would make pilgrimages and go to those different sites and then worship on the grave of these prior leaders. And so, you know, maybe this is part of why he did not want. It would be maybe too tempting for those that would know where Moses was buried. Maybe it would become a distraction, a form of idolatry possible. But regardless, God did not want anyone to know. And Michael, the archangel, was going to contend. He was going to dispute about this. Now, he did it respectfully because he didn't even bring an accusation against Satan the devil, but he did hold firm and defended the will of God. Satan the devil has been one to want his own will, desire his own will. But, you know, somebody who is very self-willed and wants what they want, they can be a peach to be around, and they can be very kind as long as they're getting their will. But the moment one is, you know, maybe there's a line, no, that's not going to happen. Now you have an issue. That's where what they say, the claws come out or the fangs come out. This is a self-willed individual where things are good as long as things are good on their time and what they want and what their will is. This can be the same with Satan, the devil. But there's an interesting scripture in Ecclesiastes 10, how this attitude can show up in a variety of ways for a self-willed individual. Ecclesiastes 10, and starting in verse 11. Now this is, we'll see what this is talking about, but how it starts out is quite interesting. It says, a serpent may bite when it is not charmed. As long as, that's fine, whatever you want, you know, when we get down to it. Or, let me hear what you have to say. What you have to say is very important. Oh, that's great. Yes, we should. Now, what happens when that doesn't happen? But it says, a serpent may bite when it's not charmed. The babbler is no different. One who is eager to share their opinion, their thoughts, what should happen, should not happen. But when that's rejected, or they're not charmed, they're not getting their way, now you got issues. The words of the wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool shall swallow him up. But this is in the context of a babbler, one who is self-willed, one who wants to talk all the time, but refuses to listen to instruction based upon God's will. A fool, a babbler. But again, if they're charmed, okay, you're so wise. Yes, okay, well, we'll do that. Everything's fine. Satan the devil wanted what he wanted from the beginning. He was self-willed, and he was willing to embrace whatever evil possible to get his way. Isaiah 14 and verse 12. Isaiah 14 and verse 12. Says, how you have fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning, how you are cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation, on the furthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet you shall be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest depths of the pit. But notice, I will. This is a self-willed being. Unlike Michael, the archangel, who is faithful to God, who defended God's will. No, your will. I want to be a part of that. Even the respect that he was willing to show Satan, because he did not want to go down a road of accusation and disrespect. He was so close to God's way of life and so far away from the other, he wanted to stay far away from that other spirit of accusation. This is something we must stay away from, an attitude of self-exaltation or self-will. So we must ask ourselves the question, this is where it gets challenging, where the rubber meets the road. Well, is there anything that we want more than God's will? Is there anything that we know, yeah, we shouldn't be a part of that, but is there an excuse? You know, I think where some of the work can really make one feel like you're stepping on my toes is with entertainment. Entertainment is one of those maybe gray areas, but not so much, but yet it's one of those things where right is right, wrong is wrong. What are we going to allow into our heart and mind? And there are a lot of things out there that really we shouldn't give place to the devil. It could be a foothold. It could be a stronghold. It could be a place for him to work. I'd like to list a few areas of entertainment in general, but there's other areas as well. But these are open doors. It really could start from a mindset of self-will. Well, because I enjoy this, but yet we should shun these certain things. This is a list that was shared to us, Katie and I, when we were in the FMP program, the Focus Mentoring Program, but it was on the spirit realm. And it went over a list of items that are gateways into the spirit world and for Satan to really attack. One is fantasy role-playing games where you can choose to be evil. TheGamer.com has a list of top role-playing games where you can actually choose to be a certain character. They call them skins. You can choose to be a skin where you can be evil. The article is called 15 Best Role-Playing Games Where You Can Be Evil on TheGamer.com. And these RPGs, they're role-playing games. You have the freedom to choose good or evil characters. You could choose to be a wizard or not. But there are games like Divinity, Original Sin, Dragon Age, Origins, Vampire, The Masquerade, Bloodlines, and the list goes on in these different role-playing games, fantasy games, fantasy powers. Another gateway for Satan to work and are not limited to are violent video games, games that include a lot of gore, diminish the value of human life. It really becomes more of almost a homicidal type of a video game where there really is a horror video games. Horror shows that glorify serial killers or glorify homicidal behavior. We have to understand the evil realm, the angelic realm, hates human beings. And so they want to promote what they would love to do to human beings. They hate that we have the opportunity to be in God's family directly. They were made in God's image, and there is a resentment there. We don't want anything to do with those types of shows. Shows that deal with witchcraft, sorcery, spells, and the supernatural. This may seem pretty obvious. Well, of course we wouldn't want to be involved in that. But Satan is very crafty. He's very crafty, and he can present things in a way that seem very innocent. I was looking up some of the more popular shows on Netflix, and there's one in particular. It's gone viral, and there's a certain dance that even goes with this particular Netflix series. But the director is Tim Burton, and he, as we know Tim Burton, he deals with the dark. He's always dealt with the dark. But teens, there's billions of hours of viewership on this particular Netflix series, so many are involved in this, and it's something we have to be aware of our teens and young adults. But the genre itself is comedy horror, coming of age supernatural. So one of the most popular shows with billions of hours of viewership is very, very popular in the teens and young adults right now, even with adults, which should also be a red flag to us because, you know, popular with the worldly teens, it should be a red flag, and is this something we want to open the door to? Typically, these shows will start out very kind of innocent in nature, but then they'll gradually get deeper and deeper, and before you know it, now there is a gateway and an open door for Satan to get a stronghold. So we want to be very careful. But in this particular show itself, it does glorify the dark. It does glorify the dark. It glorifies sorcery, and the lead role, the individual in the lead role, prospers in almost every step of the way. In almost every aspect of life, she's beautiful, exceedingly intelligent, plays the cello, but is very dark and grimaces at the thought of being around human beings. Where does this come from? Where does this attitude and mindset come from? It's anti-people. So much more intelligent than basically stupid humans. And this is training teens to believe this is the way to prosper. It's the dark. It's a dark way of life and the hatred of human beings. It's also mixed with a lot of sorcery as well. The other gateways that open the door for Satan to work is pornography, abuse of alcohol or mind-altering drugs, things that are not done in moderation. So that would be obsessions, TV obsessions, social media obsessions. Obsessiveness is not good in any form or fashion. You could study the Bible too long. There's been some individuals, they've locked themselves up in their room. They've studied the Bible for days on end without any social contact, and the end result is horrible. Because the end result, and the end result of this one individual came from being obsessed with the study of the Bible and no break for anything else. They came to the scripture of, if your right arm causes you to sin, what do you do? And that's what the individual did. So, you know, even an obsession, things are in an obsession or an unbalanced way, that's an open door. Roots of bitterness, holding on to a grudge, not willing to forgive. Sorcery and striving to be in direct contact with fallen angels. Of course, we would say, well, yes, this is for sure an open door. But that would be voodoo, wizardry, Ouija boards. Also, false religions. It's an open door for fallen angels to work. They promote the same lies. You know, in the Bible, we're told that there are doctrines of what? Doctrines of demons. And it is literal. There are these false doctrines to be aware of. Jealousy, lust, greed, focusing on self. So, you know, these are things that men will pursue in according to their own will and desire. We must be like Michael the archangel and defend God's will. Submit to God's will, not get anywhere close to the attitude of Satan's mindset. James 4 and verse 7 and 8, it tells us, therefore submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. So part of the submission that we have, are to have in life, is to pursue God's will with all our heart and mind. Next point I'd like to look at is the other attribute of Michael the archangel, is that he was a very respectful angel. Let's go back to Jude 1 and verse 5. Jude 1 and verse 5. And this is a subject here about ungodly men who are rejecting God's authority and spoke evil of dignitaries. Now, there's a certain level of respect that we are to have to all men. And it's not just men in the church or men in position in the church. This is men in authority in the world, our superiors, national leaders. We are to hold in respect. And the Bible is very clear that we are to be respectful in that way. Now, this is talking about ungodly men rejecting God's authority and speaking evil of dignitaries. But this parallels with fallen angels. And we have a couple of examples to consider here. Jude 1, starting in verse 5, but I want to remind you, though you once knew this, that the Lord, having saved the people out of the land of Egypt, afterwards destroyed those who did not believe. So a change in heart after all that they were able to witness and see and understand God's hand, and they backtracked. And the angels who did not keep their proper domain, but left their abode, he has reserved in everlasting chains under darkness for the judgment of the great day. Drop down to verse 8. Likewise also these dreamers defile the flesh, reject authority, and speak evil of dignitaries. Yet Michael the archangel, in contending with the devil when he disputed about the body of Moses, dared not bring against him a reviling accusation, but said, "The Lord rebuke you." But these speak evil of whatever they do not know, and whatever they know naturally, like brute beasts, in these things they corrupt themselves. Woe to them, and woe to those who basically take on the same attitude as the fallen angels, of those who are willing to go down that same road of disrespect. Woe to them, for they have gone in the way of Cain, and have run greedily in the error of Balaam for profit, and perished in the rebellion of Korah. So then we have three examples here, specifically from the Bible, that talk about the attitude and nature to completely avoid that are a part of the fallen angels. With the example of Cain, and one thing to note too, you know, Michael, the faithful servant of God, was not going to partake of that spirit of accusation. Cain, the rebellion of Korah, they did partake in that spirit of accusation. It wasn't just against God's leaders. It was against God himself. That's where the issue was at. And the issue was that that wrong spirit was accusing God and his decisions. This is a spirit that's probably a familiar spirit that has been around for a long time. But they gave in to the spirit of accusation, the same attitude of those angels that did not keep their proper domain. With the example of Cain, it's not just that there was error, it was that there was a running to error. This is also mentioned in verse 11. It's not that, you know, this is just kind of a trip over the rug when you walk in. This was a major error, and this is a very wrong situation for Cain. But basically, he hated that God's judgment was that he would not accept his offering. He rejected his offering, and this hurt his feelings. This bothered him. It infuriated him. In Genesis 4 and verse 3 and 8, or 3 through 5, it said that God did not respect Cain and his offering. Well, how dare him not respect Cain? How dare him not respect his offering? You know, that's the way he felt. You don't respect my offering? This bothered him. And it was anger, and that anger manifested into hatred towards his brother because he respected his offering. Maybe he's the issue. But really, it was God that he had a hatred for. And God knew that there was something very deep inside Cain, something that was very wrong. It was not just the offering as a part of it, but there was a deeper matter with Cain. Notice what's said in verse in 1 John 3 and verse 10. 1 John 3 and verse 10. In this, the children of God and the children of the devil are manifest. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is he who does not love his brother. For this is the message that you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another, not as Cain, who was of the wicked one. There's something wrong with Cain and his attitude, his mindset, his way of life. He was of the wicked one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his works were evil and his brother's righteous. Something that was wrong with Cain's actions, his mindset. But yet God still told him, if you do well, will you not be accepted? And talk about commitment from the sermonette. God is committed to his people. God's committed to us. If we are willing to repent and change, his hand is extended. What was in his heart that came out was murder. He murdered his brother. The fallen angels are full of violence and hate towards God and mankind. What about the rebellion of Korah? You know, Korah is a prime example of losing respect for God too. Similar to the way the third of the angel tried to remove God's authority or to encroach. Basically, it was a coup, a third of the angels. He had 250 of the leaders of different ones of Korah and the Levites. They came against Moses and Aaron, but they came against God, if you read through the section. And, you know, they basically stepped out of their role, like a third of the angels stepped out of their proper domain, and they left their responsibility. They were influenced. This was an influence that they gave into, that same influence. And they accused Moses and Aaron. It was a spirit of accusation, but they left their dominion. You know, the holy, righteous angels are very careful to uphold God's will, to defend God's will. They're very careful to show respect to God. The fallen angels want to influence others to be like them and to reject God's way of life. They want to be worshipped. I think it's interesting that there's such this big movement on individuals now, and where does this influence come from? But, you know, to be pansexual or to have, you know, gender, this gender identity crisis, things removed. Where does this come from? Well, we know that the angels, you know, they're not given to marriage. They don't marry. They aren't male or female. And they hate that the fact that we are made in God's image and that there is an opportunity to be like God, to be like Him, to understand what He is like, to see Him as He is. And, you know, our young adults and teens have issues in this world today. The influence is great, but there is a push. Basically, they want mankind to be sexless, don't give into marriage, do things that are unnatural, and they don't like that. You know, they don't like that they have the opportunity to procreate. They want them to leave their dominion, to turn to something that's not natural, to be like a fallen angel, basically. And so there's this drive and influence for sex changes. Is it possible that they want humans to be sexless? It seems like that is a possibility. Where do these ideas come from? But they want to be worshipped. And the faithful angels and servants of God, they don't want to go down that road at all. Won't turn there, but in Revelation 22, John is actually rebuked by the angel because he tried to worship him. It's a holy, righteous angel, and he said, "See that you do not do that." He says, "For I am your fellow servant of your brethren, the prophets, and those who keep the word of this book. I'm your fellow servant. Do not worship me." You see the respect that they have for God the Father and Jesus Christ. Move on to the next attribute. That is, Michael the archangel is a guardian angel. God's word reveals that the archangel Michael has an important role as a defender and a guardian of God's people. Daniel 12 and verse 1. And we'll need his help. We need all the help and strength that we can get in the times that we are in. Daniel 12 and verse 1 says that at that time, Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. And there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation even to that time. And at that time, your people shall be delivered. At that time, Michael will stand up, the great prince who stands watch over the sons of God's people. And to stand up, that phrase comes from the Hebrew word amad, and it means to interpose, to come forth and render aid. It's from Strong's lexicon. So he's going to fight for God's people. He's going to stand watch. I know there's different individuals who've had security jobs in the past, and you know, there's a certain awareness that those have for the people in the office or whoever they're holding security for. You know, there's a certain watch, there's a lookout. God's angels do this. They want to help God's people. Most help that we can receive, of course, is through our advocate, Jesus Christ. And it's as if he's our elder brother, like our big brother that comes to aid for us if we're bullied. He's there to help us. God's angels are an extension of the help that God provides through Jesus Christ. They are servants of God. Let's turn to Hebrews 1 and verse 1. And Hebrews, especially in this first chapter, you know, it is about the superiority of Jesus Christ. And we know that, you know, we are made a little lower than the angels. But Jesus Christ is far above anyone now in this life and the angelic realm. There is honor for God's angels and those wonderful holy and righteous servants of God, but there is a much greater honor with Jesus Christ, a great honor that he has. There's a superiority of Jesus Christ. So in Hebrews 1 and verse 1, we'll see a little bit about this, but it says, God, who at various times and in various ways spoke in times past to the Father and by the prophets, has in these last days spoken to us by his Son, whom he has appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the worlds, who being the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person, and upholding all things by the word of his power, when he had by himself purged our sins, sat down at the right hand of the majesty on high, having become so much better than the angels, as he has by inheritance obtained a more excellent name than they. We see there is much greater honor with Jesus Christ than the angels. But there is honor with the angels. There's much greater honor. For to which of the angels did he ever say, you are my son, today I have begotten you. And again, I will be to him a father, and he shall be to me a son. But when he again brings the firstborn into the world, he says, let all the angels of God worship him. And part of the function of the angels is to worship God, and they're servants of God. And of the angels, he says, who makes his angels spirits, and his ministers a flame of fire. And a little bit of a parallel and kind of lumping in the angelic realm, or the ministering spirits, the angels, and the physical ministry here. And if you look at some of the functions within the physical ministry on earth today, and angels, there's some similarities as far as they're servants. They're to help God's people, look after God's people. You know, they're to shepherd the flock, to look after the flock, to feed the flock. So there is this overseeing. There is a care for, and it's similar in that way. But yet then it makes it clear Jesus Christ is far above his angels' spirits and the ministers of flames of fire. But to the Son, he says, your throne, O God, is forever and ever. A scepter of righteousness is the scepter of your kingdom. You have loved righteousness and hated lawlessness. Therefore, God, your God, has anointed you with the oil of gladness more than your companions. And you, Lord, in the beginning laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you will remain. And they will all grow old like a garment, like a cloak. You will fold them up, and they will be changed. But you are the same, and your years will not fail. But to which of the angels has he ever said, sit at my right hand till I make your enemies your footstools? And then there's a little nugget here where we think about the role of an angel. It says, are they not all ministering spirits sent forth to minister for those who will inherit salvation? You know, the ministry of Jesus Christ is kind of similar, if you think about it, in roles with the ministering spirits. That term ministering is about serving, servants. let's turn to Hebrews 13 and verse 17. They oversee, they look out for, and just as shepherds are appointed to shepherd the flock. Hebrews 13 and verse 17. Obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls, looking out for again, Michael the archangel is a guardian angel. As those who must give account, let them do so with joy and not with grief, for that would be unprofitable for you. Now, this is something that we all have to consider, even the ministry, because before one was ever ordained a minister, had a minister. And I think about the different ministers that I had and the different, how did I treat them? You know, I think if I had seven ministers, maybe I need to send them an apology for every one of them. I know you had me in my teens. I know you had me when I was a young adult. I know you helped me. No, they were all very helpful, encouraging, and a blessing, really. There was one individual who really did not like it that the kids would run outside afterwards and pick these red berries off the tree and pelt them at each other. They were so tempting. I don't remember over and over again being out there and saying, "Now, kids, no more red berries." we're all so. We did pretty good for a period of time. Then when they bloomed again and they had their red berries. No, we did pretty good. But this is something we all have to think about. And it's not limited to the ministry. This is those who are superiors. And we all have our superiors. So do we treat one with respect? The holy angels treat God with the utmost respect. And they look out. I guess the main point, I got sidetracked, but the main point I wanted to look at is that there is they look out for you. And this is a part of what the angels do. And won't turn here for sake of time, but in Psalm 34 in verse 4 through 7, it talks about how God's angels encamp around those who fear him. They are there. They protect. They guard. And let's go ahead and turn to Psalm 91 and verse 9, and then we'll move on to the very last point. And that point will go very quickly. Psalm 91 and verse 9. Psalm 91 and verse 9. It says, "Because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your dwelling place, no evil shall befall you, nor shall any plague come near your dwelling, for he shall give his angels charge over you." Divine protection, angelic protection. "To keep you in all your ways, in their hands they shall bear you up, lest you dash your foot against a stone. You shall tread upon the lion and the cobra, the young lion and the serpent you shall trample underfoot." So there is supernatural protection from God in time of trouble. And this leads us to the final attribute I want to look at, because there will be times of trouble in the future prior to the return of Jesus Christ. And Michael, the archangel, is also a warrior. Revelation 12 and verse 3. Revelation 12 and verse 3. I'll summarize this section here, but it talks about how Satan drew a third of the angels, and there is protection that will be provided to the church. And in verse 7, it says, "And war broke out in heaven, Michael and his angels." So it seems that there are those under Michael, other angels that are also under him, and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought. So there's those under Satan and his minions, and there is a spiritual battle and a warfare that's there. "But they did not prevail, nor was a place found for them in heaven any longer. So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. Then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, 'Now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have come. For the accuser of our brethren who accused them before our God day and night has been cast down. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony, and they did not love their lives to the death. Therefore, rejoice, O heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and the sea, for the devil has come down to you having great wrath, because he knows that he has a short time." Michael, the archangel, is a warrior for righteousness, and he will help battle in times ahead. Our eyes are not open to all of the spiritual warfare that is taking place, and it's a good thing for us. If he wanted us to see those things, then he would. I don't think we could handle it, but there is a legitimate war taking place. We understand a little bit. He lets us understand a little bit. We see very dimly. But just because we don't see it with our eyes does not mean it's not there. And make no mistake, we are in a battle, and we walk by faith and not by sight. There's an example when the king of Syria made war against ancient Israel, and they surrounded them and with the Syrian horses and chariots and a great army. And one of Israel's servants was very concerned. What are we going to do? We can't take on what is there. And he asked Elijah what they were to do. We're surrounded. And Elijah prayed to God, and he said, "Lord, I pray, open his eyes that he may see." And God opened his eyes, and he was able to see what was invisible and the angelic protection that was there. And the mountains were full of horses and chariots of fire. It was full of it. The warriors were there to help God's people. It's an inspiring account to consider. So we don't understand all of the spiritual battles taking place. We don't understand what everybody is going through individually. Everybody is going through something, and there's something that each one is having to overcome. We don't even understand probably all of the spiritual battles that are taking place in our life and some of the decisions that we make that maybe the angels rejoice in. That was the right decision. Keep pressing ahead. But we're each in a battle, and we're each having to overcome the wiles of the devil and to be victorious. Those who will remain faithful to God, those who will remain faithful, like the angels were faithful, like two-thirds of the angels were, we will remain and be victorious. Those who defend God's will, those who respect God, those who yield to the help that God provides and fight the good fight of faith, they will be victorious, just as God's holy angels are victorious and will be with God for eternity. One final scripture to conclude, Matthew 25 and verse 31. That's a part of the victory as we think about. And when Jesus Christ returns, not only will he be returning, but he will be returning with all of his angels, all of the angels. Matthew 25 and verse 31. When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the holy angels with him, then he will sit on the throne of his glory. All the nations will be gathered before him, and he will separate them one from another as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And he will set the sheep on his right hand, but the goats on the left. Then the king will say to those on his right hand, "Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world." When the Son of Man comes in all his glory, not only will he have all of the angels with him, but hopefully they will hear these words, "Well done, good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your Lord."